Good evening. A departmental trial for an NYPD cop reveals that officers are free to use whatever physical means at their disposal to subdue a suspect. In this case, it led to death. A mega tower juggernaut runs into a neighborhood that fights back. And is the president of the United States crazy? With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Wednesday, June 5th, 2019. First to Linda Perry with these headlines.
Thanks, Paul. A federal prosecutor is sitting in on the administrative trial of the New York City police officer Daniel Pantaleo, accused in the killing of Eric Garner with a chokehold banned by the department. The appearance of Assistant U.S. Attorney Elizabeth Geddes at the proceeding today signaled that the Department of Justice still has an interest in how Eric Garner died. We'll have more on the trial today in this program. A former prosecutor in the Central Park 5 case resigned from at least two nonprofits. Backlash intensified following the release of the Netflix series When They See Us. It's a miniseries on the trial. Vassar College and Safe Horizons both confirmed Linda Fairstein's resignations. Fairstein was the top Manhattan sex crimes prosecutor when the five were charged with the 1989 rape and beating of a woman jogging in Central Park. All of their convictions were later overturned. The Central Park Five have been suffering from what they experienced as youth ever since. And the Trump administration's new restrictions on travel to Cuba, which was announced on Tuesday by the U.S. Commerce Department, took effect today. It limits the ways New Yorkers and other Americans can travel to Cuba by wiping out the most popular category of legal travel to the island, the group educational trips known as people-to-people travel, and it eliminates U.S. cruise travel to Cuba, the pretext used by John Bolton and others in the Trump administration is by these restrictions, they're preventing Cuba from enriching their military intelligence and security services. While in effect, what's going on is they're stopping an important source of income to the Cuban people through the travel industry. In New York, shares of cruise line companies fell in midday trading. Major cruise lines immediately dropped stops in Cuba from their itineraries, and they hastily rerouted ships to other destinations, including Mexico. According to the Cruise Lines International Association, it's an industry trade group, nearly 800,000 passengers already on cruises or booked for future trips are affected. At docks in Florida and aboard ships at sea, frustrated travelers vented today over wrecked vacation plans. Cruising from the U.S. to Cuba started in May 2016 as Barack Obama, when he was president, moved to improve relations with the country. Drivers of classic cars, restaurants, tour guides, and owners of bed and breakfasts are all saying the Trump administration's new restrictions on U.S. travel to Cuba will be a severe blow to their businesses.
Thanks, Linda. Spectators at the departmental trial of the NYPD officer whose use of a banned maneuver resulted in the death of Eric Garner were outraged at the testimony of a police academy instructor who says cops routinely use physical tactics against suspects without training. Appearing as a defense witness for embattled officer Daniel Pantaleo, the retired sergeant, Russell Jung, rejected the assertion that officers should not perform a maneuver that they're not trained to do. "Where does it say that?" Jung said. A gasp echoed through the chamber, and outside of one police plaza where the trial is being held, family and friends expressed their anger. Garner's mother, Gwen Carr, has been attending the trial every day and speaking to reporters outside. She said she will continue her vigil.
Good afternoon, everyone. As always, I thank you all for standing with me and for supporting me, because this battle is not easy.
Amen.
And as I sat in court all day today and listening to more lies, listening to how they're going to let Pantaleo not testify because he can give in a statement that cannot be challenged. Is that fair? Is that justice?
No!
I don't think that's justice. We waited 5 years. We fought hard. I fought hard with all of these committees to get this trial. And now at the end of it, we may not even know what the end result is.
That's right.
Shame on NYPD. All right. Yay! We have to know. We have to fight for this, ladies and gentlemen. We have to not let it stop here, because tomorrow the trial might be over. But we're not going to be over. We're going to be out here. We're going to be about, out and about. And we're still going to carry on. We're going to let them know that they're not going to sweep this under the rug.
And public advocate Jumaane Williams said waiting 5 years for justice is too much pain and suffering for a mother to have to bear.
Everybody say 5 years.
5 years.
Everybody say 5 years.
5 years.
That's how long this mother, and we can't forget that this is a mother, and all the community has been waiting for justice. But I just want to say how low the bar is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is the first thing that probably should have happened.
That's right.
This is, we are putting so much energy for a bar that is now ridiculously low.
That's right.
All we are saying is that the man who murdered someone on TV that the world saw no longer work for NYPD.
That's right.
That's it.
And I got to tell you, this Mayor de Blasio and this police commissioner could have acted for the past 5 years and have chosen not to. This was no other administration. This belongs at your doorstep.
That's right.
That's right.
This, however, we hope at least can bring some semblance of justice. I have seen in that courtroom them trying to pretend that we didn't see what we saw. This was a chokehold.
Right.
I'm getting the stop sign, so I'm going to say the last thing that I'm happy came out. Even on their own paid medical examiner who came from St. Louis, Missouri, had to acknowledge that the cascading effect that led to his death is critically important. And based on everything we saw, that chokehold, or that yokehold, as that medical examiner said, was the initial thing that cascaded what happened to Eric Garner. We all saw it. Damn it, fire him.
Eric Garner's mother, Gwen Carr, then answered questions from the media before returning to the police courtroom.
Yeah, well, I think that the DOJ should have moved 4 years ago at least. And we haven't heard anything from the DOJ in 2 years. So everybody needs to move and get Pantaleo and all the other officers fired. Get them off the payroll.
And my other thing is, they were here for the defense testimony, but not the prosecution.
Well, you know, we see how they call it a kangaroo court. There you go. That's what they came for.
Great. Next, any other questions from media?
Ms. Carr, how do you feel about the fact that you're not going to clear from the officer involved in the death?
I am very it's disgracing that we're not going to hear from them. How is they not going to let him testify, and he is the key factor in this trial? And they're going to let him just write it out, give it in, and it's never going to be contested? No, that is not right. We have to do another movement on that also.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Ms. Carr, there was a sergeant that testified today that there are many maneuvers that police use on the street that are not trained in the police academy. Do you have a reaction to that?
Yeah, they're thug moves. That's what they do. They are hired killers, some of them, because they kill people and then there's no justice, no accountability. So, you know, what is that saying? He was proud. He stood up in the courtroom and proud said there's many maneuvers.
Yes,
we might have to kick him in the shin, kick him in the head. So it's not taught, but we do it, is what he's saying.
Meanwhile, the mother of Anthony Baez, who died under similar circumstances in the 1990s, stood by. An activist with Moms Rising spoke out.
We rallied around a mayor that said he was going to take us forward in reforming police, but we have gone backwards. Right here to my left is Mrs. Baez. The same chokehold that we're discussing today was applied to her son. Her son was also killed by the police, by a chokehold,
right,
but decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what happened to Francis Lavoti, the officer that killed Anthony Baez? He was indicted. Mm-hmm. He went to trial. He lost his job.
That's right.
And this is under an administration that we called racist.
Mm-hmm.
We said it was rampant with police brutality, lack of accountability, and lack of transparency. Fast forward to 2019, and what do we have? Jemani said we have the lowest bar possible. We're out here begging that somebody still not be paid by our hardworking tax dollars, right, who's out there killing us. We have gone backwards, and Moms Rising and Malcolm X Grassroots Movement are here to say, not on our watch. Right. We will move forward whether you are with us or not. We will move forward, we will have justice, Pantaleo will be without a job, and we will continue to fight this that plagues our city. New Yorkers, we will not go back. Let me hear you say, we won't go back.
We won't go back.
Fire Pantaleo.
Fire Pantaleo.
Fire Pantaleo.
Fire Pantaleo.
Fire Pantaleo.
Fire Pantaleo.
Pantaleo was caught on cell phone video taking down Garner, who repeatedly yelled, "I can't breathe." The defense contends that Pantaleo used an approved seatbelt hold during the fatal incident and not the choke hold that he's accused of using.
Your children and your parents must be so ashamed. Together. If you're standing with a murderer, then what's that saying? Your children and your parents must be so ashamed. If you're standing with a murderer, then what's that saying? Your children and your parents must be.
The NYPD commissioner will ultimately decide how and whether Pantaleo is punished. He could be fired. Pantaleo was not criminally charged in state court. A long-running criminal investigation by the U.S. Justice Department must wrap up by July 18th, the statute of limitations deadline. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In more local news.
Who is New York City for now? With all of these developments, you're changing the dynamic, and the people who've lived here their whole lives are now getting pushed out, and they can't live here anymore. So we need to think about that as an entire city and focus on that.
Protests and lawsuits at 60 Center Street are countering a plan approved by the city to build four mega luxury towers up to 83 stories tall in the Two Bridges neighborhood of the Lower East Side, joining one 70-story structure already under construction near the Manhattan Bridge.
Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power!
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
And one group of tenants has been protesting gentrification in the neighborhood for years. They held a separate rally from political leaders who brought a lawsuit against the projects that was filed this morning.
We don't want this infill plan in NYCHA, and much less those four luxury towers. We want a plan for the working people and to protect the whole neighborhood, Loisaida and Chinatown. Our plan, the Chinatown Working Group plan, should be passed. And if we had this protection before, we wouldn't have to be dealing with Extel Tower and neither with this NYCHA privatization plan.
A short distance from the Chinatown Working Group protest that was being held near the One Center Street offices of the New York City government, a short distance away, City Council member Margaret Chin described the suit she brought with Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer to at least force the project into the so-called Uniform Land Use Review Procedure, or ULURP, that would mandate extensive public hearings and a City Council vote before the waterfront towers could be erected. The city says the buildings are grandfathered by a project that was proposed but never built in the area in the 1960s. Chin says that's ridiculous.
If we prevail, the developer will not be able to proceed with development of the site, while our lawsuit, which demand a full public review, works its way through the courts. We stand here today to show the developers that we will not allow this working class neighborhood to be denied a say in its future. This has been a long fight, but our position today has not wavered. The city's attempt to bypass a necessary public review process by labeling these luxury mega tower as a minor modification is unacceptable. When they close the door on us, we push on and made new strides in this fight to push back on the ludicrous claim that a neighborhood's worth of rezoning could ever be considered a minor modification. We sue for the right for a public review process, and we discover a deed restriction on one of the properties which was meant to reserve housing in perpetuity for low-income seniors and disabled residents. from the beginning, we knew this was a project undertaking in a non-transparent way that would provide windfall profits to developers at the expense of working New Yorkers.
City Council Member Margaret Chin, according to the city, the current construction is allowable as a minor modification of the 1960s plan, a perspective challenged by Borough President Gail Brewer.
This is not a minor modification. No way. Four huge towers proposed, 63 to 80 stories in a low-rise neighborhood. That is not a minor modification. The amount of units of these proposed developments are proposed to bring to our neighborhood is comparable to the neighborhood rezonings that our office has been involved in. As many units as was discussed in East Harlem, huge area, Inwood, East New York, Far Rockaway, years of discussion. No minor modifications there, so why should we have minor modifications here? That wasn't just a single block, that was huge. Guess what? This is the same size in terms of the number of units being discussed. All of those other rezonings went through a public review process. Not to mention, of course, thanks to the amazing people standing here, we found out about deed restrictions. Who would have known if we had not had gone to court? Nothing transparent. That was the one that limits one site for affordable, low-income senior housing, part of a deed restriction. Nobody knew. We had to go to court. But we will prevail. These projects will be required to undergo public review. And that would allow the community board, the elected officials, to work with everyone to come up with a plan.
And that's Gail Brewer, the Manhattan Borough President. Mayor de Blasio has been accused or come under criticism of late for being too friendly to these large-scale developers. The project to build the mega towers has been approved by the Department of City Planning, and the battle now is to derail construction for the time being. And can the president be removed from power for mental illness? Founding Father James Madison thought so, apparently. During the Constitutional Convention of 1787, Madison said a president could be removed for incapacity, negligence, or perfidy. Last week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, in essence, publicly implied that President Trump is too mentally impaired to function as president. If that's true, doesn't she have a constitutional duty to act? Many recent statements by the president, such as a speech Trump made to his conservative base, have prompted speculation of the president's mental fitness.
You know I'm totally off script right now. The Green New Deal, right? Darling, is the wind blowing today? I'd like to watch television, darling. Russia, please, if you can, get us Hillary Clinton's emails. Please, Russia, please.
He asked Russia to go get the emails. We're going to look into his finances. I said, where did that come from? He always talked about Russia.
The attorney general says, I'm going to recuse myself. And I said, why the hell didn't he tell me that before I put him in? Russia, 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 Russia. My wife said, you never spoke to anybody from Russia, darling. I said, that's right.
President Trump is waiting for the Mueller report.
He's bad. He's a bad guy. But you know what I like about this? Number one, I'm in love, and you're in love. We're all in love together. We've done something that nobody's ever done. Don, how you doing? Hey, Donnie. I love you, Donnie. For 35 years, now they call
Mr. President, sir. How are you?
Trains to Hawaii. How do you get to Europe? We haven't figured that one out yet. We don't use airplanes anymore.
Dr. Bandy Lee is a forensic psychologist at the Yale University School of Medicine and an expert on violence. She says the Mueller report shows that Trump is a clear and present danger to the world.
We had been stating that he was showing more of a pattern of pathology than a pattern of strategy. And all the kinds of positive things we might like to associate with a president. Unfortunately, over time, the evidence was accumulating that it was more pathologically based. Now, as of a few weeks ago, we now have the definitive report that, in fact, concludes that he does not have the mental capacity to engage in rational, reality-based decision-making. In other words, it is now concluded that it is all pathology, not strategy on his part. And this is a very important conclusion that we have been able to draw based on our mental health analysis of the Mueller report, which is now gaining more attention because of the importance of our results.
And what are some of the evidence? Explain to us who don't know what pathology is, what that means, and why that's different from just like your eccentric Uncle Harry.
We don't encounter pathology on an everyday basis. In fact, the likelihood is the most people you encounter every day is someone who is mentally well and healthy. And so you can assume that they are acting on reality and that they are rational, that they will not be doing something out of intense emotional needs. In other words, living in a whole different universe than you are and catching you off guard and potentially causing you a great deal of harm, just like what you were mentioning in terms of belligerently inciting other nations, hostile powers, terrorist groups. So you wouldn't expect that from a normal individual. Now that we have our report stating and demonstrating that the president is not operating from a healthy baseline, then we can expect that his decisions will be very damaging for the nation and for the American people.
How do you know that the president of the United States is not operating normally?
This is based on a formal, very technical mental health analysis of some of the most, some of the best quality information we could ask for doing such an analysis, which we didn't expect this, but the Mueller report, in fact, provided better raw material than we could ever ask for in any of our clinical practice, because it gave us high quality, extremely relevant information from his coworkers, associates, both allies and opponents, under sworn testimony of the exact process he was using to address information, to make decisions, to whether or not he was involving impulsivity or undue emotional needs when engaging in decision making. We were able to assess all of that based on an abundant amount of information in the Mueller report. In fact, we had all the information we need. We did not require a personal interview, which is not even central when it comes to mental capacity. Fitness reserve has more to do with one's day-to-day function, not how they are, you know, internally in their head. And so we were able to come to a conclusion. Even though we requested a personal exam from the president, he received our request, but he didn't agree to an examination. So we went ahead because we had enough information, and we went ahead with our conclusion and our official report, which we have been sending into authorities, stating our findings, which are serious findings rising to a level of national emergency.
What can we expect? Just to wrap up, what can we expect?
It's not what we expect. We are in extreme danger, where the likelihood of the nation and the American people being placed in imminent danger is extremely high. We are already in an unacceptable level of danger. The first two recommendations we make are to remove the president from access to nuclear weapons. The second is to remove from him war-making powers, because these two are what place us in imminent danger. We don't recommend the exact political means by which to institute them, but we point out the medical need for these to be immediately addressed.
What is motivating him, in your opinion?
It's the pathology. His drive merely for basic approval, which in an ordinary person will not be such an overwhelming drive, for him led him to become one of the most famous TV personalities and now needing to be a U.S. president. And now that he won, based on simple false presentations, misrepresentations of his ability, he wants to maintain that. He has to maintain it in order not to crumble in the face of a lack of ability to buttress his own sense of self.
What does crumble mean?
So I'm trying to use lay terms, but it's basically a deflation of his grandiose sense of self-image, the self-image that he has disproportionately inflated and presented to the world and to himself. And without approval of the world, he cannot maintain personally. And so this kind of mental fragility can rapidly turn into a mental crisis, which would make a nuclear war or devastating war immediately attractive, because that's an immediate show of force, a show of power, and we have one of the greatest militaries, the greatest military in the world, to be able to demonstrate it. It would be too attractive and too tempting for the president to not use in the event of a mental crisis.
Anything you'd like to add?
Soon we will be doing a congressional town hall. Hopefully we are making it a condition that it be bipartisan, and therefore hope that as many Republican lawmakers will be concerned about this issue enough to attend, because this is an issue beyond partisan politics. It has to do with public safety and survival. It should be their primary concern as well as ours.
Dr. Bandy Lee is a forensic psychologist at Yale University School of Medicine and an expert on violence. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, June 5th, 2019. The news is produced with Linda Perry and Kevin Barnum. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for joining us.